Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey there, Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss Campbell fighting Dodo Birds, Leaky Black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, you know what to do to that like button. Shouts to Brandon Davies. And if you're watching on YouTube and you're not subscribed to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel yet, please also do that while you're here. Let's get into it. We are now, believe it or not, we're now up to version 20. Of the top
21.
If it sounds stupid, that's because it is. Kansas remains number one. 20. We had 21 all last offseason.
No, we did not. Did we? We had 21 total. Here's the thing. You're too online. As the kids say, go touch grass. I think I've seen you update this top 25 and one multiple times in a single day in the offseason. No, you don't need to do that, GP. Go touch grass. You do not need to.
I don't touch grass. I touch rough and bunkers and lakes and ponds.
Been a little rough out there. Yeah, been a little rough on the course to start this spring.
Oh, but turns out when you stop playing right before Christmas, things get more difficult. I've played three times since the end of the season against a guy that I used to beat regularly, and he just smashed me all three times. It's tough out there, Norlander. I'm gonna get it back. I'm trying to rebuild.
I've yet to get out there. I've yet to play. So if it was you and me, this afternoon by some magical chance, you'd have a decent shot against me. But I feel your pain all the same.
It's tough. It's tough out there. I'm trying to rebuild just like, you ready for this? Watch this. Trying to rebuild just like John Calipari.
Okay.
Hey, he's at Arkansas. You might have heard.
I have.
He now has 7 players, and I now have Arkansas, the Razorbacks. Yep. Up to number 23 in version 20 of the top 25 and one after a commitment from Adu Thierro, who, of course, played for Cal at Kentucky. He is the second Kentucky player to follow Cal to Fayetteville, Big Z being the other one. A possible starting lineup now could be, I don't know, Boogie Flan, Janelle Davis, Carter Knox, Adu Chero, Jonas Adu. And then yeah. Big Z, Billy Richmond as reserves. Again, just 7 players, but that looks like a top 25-ish starting lineup to me. Would you agree, or are you showing more patience?
I think it's pretty close. I haven't had a version 1.0, let alone 20.0.
Congratulations.
It's May 7th. You've done this 20 times. I remember how happy you were when you didn't have to update the top 25 and 1 anymore. And look at you.
Yeah, you like these coaches out there constantly complaining about the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness. I don't know that it's negatively impacted anybody's life more than mine.
Exactly. You're not getting paid like that.
I'm not. Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm very comfortable with my level of, I'm very comfortable with my level of compensation. All right. But I don't have a John Calipari contract or a Scott Drew contract. So like, I hear you guys, the transfer portal, it's a pain in the ass. I know more than most of you. Every time Norchad or Mir decides to commit somebody, I'm right back in front of a computer anytime he commits to a play. So this is my life. Arkansas, though, it's coming together okay in Fayetteville.
It is. And the Thiero commitment was a semi-surprise here because I think the thought was that he was considering most beyond Arkansas, even though Arkansas was in there, returning to Kentucky, Pitt, and North Carolina. But Arkansas has it's got, you know, one of the best coaches and recruiters in the game, and was told that the Arkansas offer definitely came over the top and was an obvious clincher there. In addition to Thiero wanting to and believe that he can stick with the coach that he played with previously. I mean, he averaged 7.2 points and 5 rebounds. And when you can put up those numbers and encroach on, if not actually hit 7 figures as a college player, good on you. And I think his inclusion will be important for Arkansas next season. I do think he is underrated. I think the fact that you have Kentucky fans that were a little let down by the fact that he opted not to stick with Mark Pope and wanted to follow Calipari to Arkansas speaks to that. Also, our colleague Dennis Dodd sat down. He was the first national media member. He sat down with Calipari last week. And I think he has a story coming out here on Tuesday, if not Tuesday or Wednesday. And I want to point everyone to CBSSports.com and the app to read it. But the one thing that Dodd told me that Calipari said on the record in the interview is, and I don't think this will be the case, frankly, and you know Cal so well, but it kind of popped to me when Dodd mentioned it, was that Calipari in that interview was like, you know, we'll see who we get. And I like the way we're building our roster. We got a couple more guys, but like, I might not have more than 8 or 9 guys on my roster. Now, that would be a story if we actually get to the middle of June and Arkansas has a total of 9 scholarship players. That would be abnormal because unless you're really dug in, you're probably not aware of this, but 13 scholarships are allowed, but 11 is the new 13 for a lot of coaches. They max out at 11 for a number of reasons. The primary one being if you have guys who can actually play in spot 12 and spot 13, you're even more concerned with minutes distribution. You're more likely to have some disharmony in your locker room, and it's easier to, you know, have player 10 and 11 picking up scrap minutes and just having spots 12 and 13 for preferred walk-ons or outright walk-ons. So 11's like the kind of the target for a lot. Some schools obviously go 12, a few will go 13, but 11's like the new 13. The idea that Calipari might wind up with only 9 players, I kind of will believe it when I see it. But what they have right now, it's been a solid haul here. I mean, Janelle Davis will probably be one of the more impactful lead guards in the entire sport next season. I do like his potential under Calipari. I think that's actually a really good get, a really good fit. Jonas Adu from Tennessee. He's a defensive specialist. We'll see how much all-around game he can have. I feel like they still need, between him and Avisic, they need like one more impact big. We'll see who that is. They're getting fewer and fewer by the moment, by the way. There are a couple of notable ones still out there. We'll get to that before the end of the show. And then how impactful will the freshmen be? Like Carter Knox has real potential. Richmond and Boogie Fland, good players, not as highly rated. Fland expected to play more of an impact role, I think, than Richmond in year one there. EvanMia.com ranks Arkansas's current incoming transfer class, the class on the whole here, as 6th best in the nation. It's pretty good. I think it's clearly top 10. I think it's fair to put them, GP, in your top 25 rankings. We'll be interested to see who, you know, player 8, player 9, maybe player 10 is. And I think the biggest question mark out there right now, again, we'll get to the kind of the guys that are still on the board later to close the show, but it's DJ Wagner, who is considered potentially a lean to go to USC over Arkansas, but obviously Arkansas is still in there. And if they were to get Wagner there, I actually really like his potential to pop. I do like it a lot as a sophomore point guard. But overall, yeah, they've officially entered the chat, so to speak. And Calipari, no shock whatsoever, has done well for himself. But it feels like they still are missing one more. Like, that's a good guy, and they don't quite have that. But they're definitely in the mix.
right now, Arkansas has seven players. I was the beat writer for two of their fathers. If you were to get DJ Wagner also at Arkansas, I could be the beat writer for three of Arkansas's eight players, their fathers. Of course, Wani, and then Almami, Chero. That's the wild thing. 20 years ago, it was Almami Chero. Now it's Adu Thiero. Something changed. Something changed over the years. And then, of course, Billy Richmond. I covered his father first in high school, and then he went to the Vanderbilt and then to the University of Memphis. So I like the roster. To your point about trying to fill it all the way out to 13, I can't tell you how many coaches over the past, say, year or two since the world changed have told me they have no interest in ever going to 13 real scholarship players again. Yeah. Like, will not do it. The consensus I've heard is, give me 10 real players, like, and I'll take my other three scholarships and I'll give them to walk-ons because they're thrilled and they'll do anything you want. They're just you take three real players and you make them player 11, 12, 13. This is the point you're making. They're disgruntled. You take three walk-ons, make them players 11, 12, 13. They're just thrilled. They're on scholarship. They'll do anything for you. They'll work hard in practice. They'll be great teammates. And now, you know, if you're playing eight dudes, yeah, your 10th guy might be upset. Maybe your 9th guy a little unhappy. But you'd rather have one or two guys who aren't satisfied than five or six. So I think roster building is different than it's ever been. And in a sport where coaches used to scream they wanted more, now basically everybody seems to want less.
Yeah. You get into that 10 spot, you get a little, you know, you have two significant injuries and you got a real depth problem there overall. So it is interesting to see how coaches choose to approach with that. But yeah, 11 is has become more and more the sweet spot here. And again, we'll just kind of wait and see if Arkansas actually, if it doesn't hit double figures, that would be fascinating. I don't think it'll happen, but Cal told it to Dodd, and I'm interested to read and see his story there. And Arkansas doing what we basically expected here to this point. You know, Calipari being able to land some legitimate names. They still got Avisic on the roster. We'll see. You know, he had his one moment where we were ready to put him in the Hall of Fame, but we'll see if he can really pop. He'll come off the bench to start right away, obviously, there. And who else might be involved? Arkansas, as we mentioned on a recent episode as well. Also, working with one of the biggest war chests in all of college basketball from an NIL perspective. So, like, I think they're likely to still be able to get another player or two, although at some point the money does start to run lower. But like Janelle Davis, Jonas Adu, Adu Thiero, these are all players that as transfers are accepted in the industry to be receiving $1 million+ in NIL through the collective there. And so with that, you're going to attract a lot of attention and you're going to get more players interested in you because for obvious reasons there. I do like the mix though. I like the blend here. And no, Arkansas doesn't set up as the best team in the SEC. We can get to that a little later if you want and touch on it quickly, but Alabama actually very much so right now is that. But so far so good down there in Fayetteville with what Calipari's been able to do.
What is interesting, and maybe this will help us transition to where I wanted to go next. You mentioned war chest, and it's like we used to have to whisper about this stuff, right? Like, I heard now it's just like,
yeah,
Arkansas had a lot of money to spend, and that is probably how they got this done. Meantime, in the past couple of days, both Alabama and Baylor added big time heralded transfers. And I think you would agree, we don't have to put a number on it, although I've had some coaches put numbers on it, but like it's a reasonable assumption that Baylor and Alabama are also operating, you tell me, with yeah, massive war chest.
Yeah. I mean, part of this is that, you know, when Scott Drew decided not to go to Louisville and Kentucky, one of the major factors was, you know, Baylor needed to increase its NIL capabilities in order to remain competitive in the best conference in the country. And he got assurances and promises from the most powerful people at that university, around the university, and who support that university. And so because of that, it positioned Baylor to do well and to be successful in this portal cycle. And that obviously materialized in recent days. We're going to get to that. But first, partners, Nada.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Miss Anderson Cooper, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
If I'm being honest.
Move on.
Last month, Baylor adds Jeremy Roach, transfer from Duke. Then this past weekend, Norshad Omir, transfer from Miami. Here's my question.
Okay.
This seems to suggest Baylor is going to have two starters who have both played in a Final Four for different schools.
Okay.
How rare is that?
It doesn't feel unprecedented.
Put your Jared Burson hat on and tell me, how rare is that?
Uncommon. Listeners, find us, let us know. By the way, mailbag episode coming soon, maybe later this week, if not next week. So if anyone can find that for us, you also get a shout out in the mailbag episode. What schools have previously,
Has
there been a school, and if there has, who is it, that has played in the Final Four? And at the time they played in the Final Four, they had two players on their roster who had previously played in other Final Fours for other programs. If not, what GP's laying out here, and that's Baylor bringing on.
I'm not even taking it that far.
I know. You're just saying Roach and Norchad Omir both played in a Final Four and now they're on Baylor's roster. How often does that even happen? Feels like it's happened. To what level, I can't tell you. I can't give you examples. And we're not going to delay this podcast any longer than it needs to be laid on a Tuesday morning. However, it's good ads. And it's funny how the portal cycle works, because Baylor was expected to be the leader for ADU for about a week and a half or so. And then again, whatever, it's fine. Like, ADU went to Arkansas for many, many reasons. One of them being, it's believed that Arkansas paid him the most money. And then lo and behold, Baylor, in my opinion, just winds up with the bet. Like, if it had gotten ADU, it doesn't get Omir. And to me, Omir is the better player. So ADU is an awesome defensive player.
Definitely a better player. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You've got Baylor up to sixth in version 20.0, by the way. If you missed it at the top, this is the 20th. Makeover of Parrish's offseason rankings. Got Baylor 6, which I agree with and have believed for a number of weeks now, that Baylor and what Scott Drew was going to do with the portal cycle, and they're not done, would enter the top 5 conversation. If not be a top 5 team, be somewhere hovering on the outskirts, and that's exactly what they have here. And I do think it does help. Like, I think I'm bigger and higher on Roach than most others. I think many people see him as like a quality, like, you know, quality veteran guard. I don't know. I think that he is going to be an extremely, extremely important player in the sport next season, and be the exact kind of leader in the backcourt that Drew needs, and to play him and pair him with Omir, who is just an absolute hoss, man. And him getting a fresh start. Then you bring in Vijay Edgecombe, who, you know, a year from now we'll be talking, very possibly be talking about as being the latest lottery pick to come out of Waco. There's a lot going on there, and there's been a number of key commitments in recent days. We'll get to some more of those in just a second here. But as I look up and down the list on who's transferred where, to me, Omir is the most impactful and meaningful commit in college basketball, GP, in, say, the past 5 to 6 days.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fifth-year player. So he's played 4 years of college basketball, two at Arkansas State, two at Miami. He started in a Final Four. He's never not averaged at least 12.6 points and 10 rebounds in the same season. Last season, it was 17 points, 10 rebounds. He's averaged a double-double every year of college. So you add, I believe he's already 22, a fifth-year player from the portal. Jeremy Roach, also fifth-year player who, and like people can debate how impactful he'll be. I just think when you have started that many games for a program like Duke, you have real value. He'll impact winning in a positive way at Baylor. So you got two older, experienced, accomplished guys from the portal. You bring back two double-digit scorers in Langston Love and Jaden Nunn.
Yep.
And then you've got the five-star freshman in Vijay Edgecombe. I'm not comparing it, but like I just sort of like the way.
You're not going to say this, are you?
No. What do you think I'm going to say?
It kind of looks like UConn.
I'd like the way they have one five-star freshman and they're putting him in there,
yeah,
to surrounded by older guys who have already accomplished things at the collegiate level. I love that recipe, that ratio much more than, hey, like you go, let's go back up to Arkansas. Like, okay, Arkansas might start, you know, two freshmen and three transfers or something like that. Right.
Probably at least two freshmen, at least one for sure guaranteed, but we'll see. Yeah.
I like the whole one star freshman with older guy combination. That's what UConn had. And I think that's a pretty good recipe in this era of college basketball. And Baylor's going to have something that looks like that.
They've got a real shot, and they're in that discussion now along the likes of Kansas. Small minor Kansas update, by the way. Bill Self talked to Andy Katz for NCAA.com, March Madness. They did like a 15-minute interview. Don't know if you watched it or not. The two notable things in that were Self. It's been kind of expected that Furphy's going to stay in the draft. That's not 100%, but that's where it's trending, and it's been that way for a couple of weeks. But it's the first time Self said that on the record. And then he did say that Florida transfer Riley Kugel was, quote, up in the air, end quote, about coming on board at Kansas, which is certainly notable and also not surprising because Kansas added so much preseason, number one on GP's list there. And, you know, maybe rates a slight tick ahead of Baylor at this stage, but they added so much as... You know, two coaches, I think, in the past week kind of just amused aloud to me, was like, if Bill Self can get to the way they were saying it was before the portal closed late last week, was if he can get to this portal closing without losing a player and having all that, like, he really is something else. Now the portal's closed, but if a player hasn't signed on or they, you know, they can be released from it, they can still go somewhere else. But keep an eye on Kugel there at Kansas, and if he actually winds up staying on, because they've got a lot of talent there. Right now, Baylor... You take it away, GP, but Baylor probably still a slight tick behind, I think, Kansas, objectively speaking. We talked about the Jayhawks previously. No surprise whatsoever. They are in the catbird seat and number one right now, preseason in the eyes of many, although Bama's creeping in on that conversation as well.
I've had Johnny Furphy projected to leave the entire time. So that news from Bill impacts the top 25 and one in no way whatsoever. I have Kansas number one. I think Kansas is a clear number one right now. Even if they were to lose Riley Kugel, I'd still keep him number one. He would not move me off of that. And I saw some people like, man, they locked him up early and now he's unsure. I think they locked, for the reasons you just stated, them locking him up early is precisely why he might be not coming now. He came there under a different set of circumstances. Like I can tell you, somebody who looks at projected starting lineups, there was a time in this offseason where I was like, you know, Riley Kugel might start there. And then it became like, yeah, that's not going to happen. So I understand if he's now at least exploring other opportunities, that makes sense now. his playing time could be compromised by what else Kansas has been able to enroll. But either way, they're super, super strong. I would have them ahead of Baylor right now. But like you look at the Big 12, I mean, the top five of the top 25 and one right now is Kansas number one. Number two is Houston. I have North Carolina three, UConn four, but Iowa State five.
Crazy, man.
Baylor six. So what is that? Four of the top six are from the Big 12. The league's going to be absolutely awesome again.
It will. And obviously highly unlikely once we get to, you know, call it middle of February or next March, that four of the top six teams in predictive metrics will be all from the Big 12 because teams will take losses. But it's just it's roster assembly and what they look like right now. And yeah, no, it's loaded up yet again. And it's the Big 12 for you, man. It's about to get even better, by the way. Arizona coming in with that crew overall. Let's can we talk Bama real quick? Because it got speaking of Big 12, you know, it got Cliff Amore and think Kansas State was trying to get in there. Carolina was in there, but the Rutgers transfer winds up going to Alabama. You've got the Tide in the top 10. Here's your quick refresher on the Tide. They've got Grant Nelson coming back, Latrell Wrightsell coming back, who I want to say he'll be a breakout player, but they have so much coming back. I actually wonder if that'll happen. Jaron Stevenson comes back. They bring in Cliff Amore, Aiden Holloway from Auburn. Also, you know, we'll see if he can really pop and be that kind of big time player there. They've got a lot coming in. Now they lost Rylan Griffin to Kansas, big time addition for Kansas. Aaron Estrada, his college career, I think his eligibility is up. I'm pretty sure. Pringle's gone, transferred out. Sam Walters is off to Michigan. So they lost some impact players. But now we just kind of sit and wait on Sears. I think Sears is coming back. I assume you're ranking, you can tell the listeners here, GP, that it factors in Sears returning. But getting Amore, who is a big time big and was a real get there for Alabama, I thought was, you know, maybe number two behind the Omir stuff again over the past 5, 6, 7 days. But I like what the Tide have here. And give me thoughts on that. But let me tee up with this. Could we really be sitting on a season up forthcoming here? You could kind of make the case last season, but even more so this season. Will Alabama's men's basketball team be better than its football team? Because that's probably happened only a handful of times ever. Kalen DeBoer is going to have no shortage of talent there on the gridiron. And no, we're not going to break down. We're not going to break down Tide football here, but I do think there's a case. And I think there is a real chance, a very real chance that let alone GP's rankings, when we get to the AP preseason top 25 in football and in men's basketball, I think there's a very real chance that Alabama is ranked higher going into a season in men's basketball than football. Here's another one, homework assignment for our listeners. I'd be curious how many times that has ever happened heading into a season. AP preseason top 25. Has it happened more than once, twice, ever? Because there's a real chance that'll be the case later this year.
I have Alabama eighth in the top 25 and one, but that is with Mark Sears projected to remain in the NBA draft. He's maintaining his college eligibility. He has been invited to the combine later this month. Simply put, when I talk to NBA people, they tell me if he's in the draft, he'll get picked. And most people who will get picked are in the draft. Now, obviously, name, image, and likeness has changed this dramatically.
Yes.
And there is a scenario where...
Let me give you a real quick on the way that it changes dramatically, just because I'm talking to sources. For example, Janelle Davis, who I don't know if in this moment he is technically all in 100% at Arkansas, but he was paid over $1 million in name, image, and likeness, and it was worth double a two-way contract. And so I think that is a specific instance where NIL is keeping a very, very, very good college player in college as opposed to going to the draft, which is a huge thing. And I think there's a real chance that could play a role here with Sears as well.
That's right. So if Mark Sears does come back, which is fine, I've already updated 20 times. I'll update again. It's fine. But right now he's projected to stay in the draft. If he were to announce he's withdrawing and returning to Alabama and everything else that is currently in place at Alabama remains in place, I would move the Crimson Tide at least to number three behind Kansas and Houston, and maybe all the way up to number two behind Kansas. Yeah. They're like, I do think it's interesting and not a coincidence that there were at least two men who were linked to Louisville, linked to Kentucky, and they decide to stay where they're at, and now they're flourishing in name, image, and likeness transfer portal stuff. Just in the past couple of days, Nate Oates adds a big transfer to Alabama. Scott Drew adds a big transfer at Baylor. As it should surprise nobody, before you agree to reject all overtures, you make sure you've improved your situation. And that used to be mean, it used to mean make sure my contract's got as many years as I can get, as much money as I can get. Let's take care of my assistants as well. Let's see if I can get a couple more buy games put into the budget. Let's see if I can get some more recruiting money put into the budget. Now it's also, let's see if I can get my name, image, and likeness collective. Like I got it at 3 million now. Let's see if I can get it to 4.5. I've got it at 4 million now. Let's see if I can get it to 5.8. Like I had a coach tell me a couple of weeks ago, maybe last week, that they were involved with a transfer and they just got outbid. You know, they offered X amount of money and the other school offered X amount of money. And when he went back to his athletic director, and his athletic director was like, so what happened? And he just told him the truth. He was like, you know, they had more money than we had. The AD called him like the next day and was like, all right, here's another X amount of dollars that you have available to you. Go work. Like it really, that's where we're at right now.
Yeah. No, it's a thing. And basically at the high major level, all this almost seems like tailored for a mailbag question. I'm sure we'll get it. And if we do, we can expound on it on that episode. But if you're a high major program and you're not operating, and not all are, but if you're not operating heading into a portal cycle with at least 3 million, then you're going to be behind when it comes to, it's all circumstantial. It depends on how many guys you got to add and who you're looking for. But 3 million is now considered the baseline, and coaches that actually feel comfortable at their situation overall, they want to be at a minimum of 4. There are very few Arkansas, the likes of them, Kentucky, that are above that 5 number, approaching 6 overall. But Bama, yeah, they've got themselves a real situation here. I think Sears comes back. Could be wrong. Call it 50-50. And if he does, yeah, that'll be a hell of a situation there. Coming off obviously a Final Four, first one in program history, and they kept it. What's interesting is they kept it close against UConn until they didn't, like everyone else, but they actually kept it interesting for more than a half, and they'd have real motivation. That'd be a really fun plot line heading into the season. The idea that you have this football dominant school coming off its first Final Four ever, and then having a bunch of impact players. I think Amori and his impact will be huge. He might provide something that like they didn't have because no Bediako last season. He might provide that. I think that's pretty intriguing overall. Can I run down a couple other notable commits here, GP? Refresh the listeners and then give you a few uncommitted names, and we can get on out of here.
You're the one in the Vermont shirt. Who am I to?
There we go. Shouts to the Green Mountains, Dave. Of course. All right, Davon Smith went to St. John's. I think that's a pretty key pickup for Rick Pitino. He was a good lead guard, really good rebounder for a size, 6'1", and was considering the likes of Washington, West Virginia. Arkansas was also in there. Louisville tried to get in there, but St. John's winds up being the spot. Virginia, by the way, got 3 in the past 72 hours. So Tony Bennett's finally adding to his roster here. He got Jalen Worley from FSU, Elijah Saunders from San Diego State, and then TJ Power from Duke is really the one to watch. I thought Power, even with what Duke had on his roster, was set up to potentially be, you know, a noticeable impact player. Maybe borderline breakout guy at Duke. He opted not to. Wasn't promised the kind of minutes and production that he was seeking there as a sophomore. So now he'll go and play for Virginia. And maybe he's a breakout guy. We'll kind of wait and see. But Bennett's loading up there. And then kind of cool, Nada, if you have this tweet, this picture, how about, speaking of Baylor, how about Caleb Lohner? So he announced a few days ago that he was transferring out of Baylor. And he's transferring to Utah. But he's transferring to Utah, GP, to primarily play football. It's not for basketball. So this is a rare situation where you have, you know, a solid, he started his career playing for Pope at BYU, and he was like a solid role player for Baylor. And now he's going to, you know, finish out his college days playing football. And then in his announcement, I think there was a hope/intention of playing. You can see it on the graphic here if you're watching the show. You can see he's palming a couple of basketballs in the Photoshop. But you almost never see this. Kind of cool. Utah is like a legit, you know, you talk about the impact of the Big 12 and basketball and all that. And on the football end, Utah is a real program, and their coach is one of the more respected guys in that sport. And you just almost never see it. So kind of a cool little transfer story there.
Yeah. Obviously, God, what's the young man who played at VCU basketball and now plays for the Indianapolis Colts? Oh, Christ.
Oh, you're thinking of, oh man, GP, you're tossing me.
I got to get it.
Gosh. He plays tight end for the Colts. I know. Yes. It's been
Mo Alley Cox. Mo Alley Cox.
My
apologies to Mo Alley Cox. That was very disrespectful. That's very disrespectful.
Okay. By the way, that's how Devin Downey started once upon a time. So,
yeah.
So you're in the same realm as him. Yeah, there we go. Nada had us in the private chat too. Mo Alley Cox. Yes. But he never, unless I'm mistaken, VCU doesn't have football. He didn't do it when he was in college. This is the rare, it's an inter sport transfer. And I think it'd be an awesome college story if he goes and let's say Utah is a college football playoff team. And then we look up in February and he's coming off the bench and giving Craig Smith some important minutes there. We'll see if it actually happens, because most of the time coaches don't want this to happen. You want to, because the nature of Division I athletics, you got to commit to one sport, but apparently this is on the table. And we talk about coaches wanting to have that, like, you know, 11th roster spot. Maybe Caleb Lohner will be the 12th roster spot for the Utes, who are obviously in search of a number of transfers at the moment.
What else you got?
Top uncommitted guys. These are per David Cobb. And I got a little bit of intel on some of these, none on some others. Kadari Richmond, involved with St. John's, Illinois, Syracuse, Oklahoma. I think a decision's coming down pretty quick here on Richmond, but he's probably the top name. It's either him or Coleman Hawkins, who's also in the draft. All these guys are, most of them are testing draft waters. Coleman Hawkins, it sounds like that is Arkansas, Carolina, Louisville, Kansas State. There could be others. He will command a very, very high NIL price, and he really does want to go the NBA route. But I'd say the buzz on Hawkins at this stage is more likely than not that he would return to college, although no sure thing. But yeah, Arkansas, Carolina, Kansas State, Louisville. I'm sure there are more, but that's a big one for sure. I mentioned DJ Wagner before. Seems like that will either be USC or Arkansas. Great. Osabor is a big name out there. He visited Louisville last week. I think he wrapped up his Texas Tech visit yesterday. And then he will visit Washington. My pick is Washington there, but we'll see. He's a very, very good player. And then obviously played for Sprinkle. He started at Montana State and then went with Sprinkle to Utah State, was the Mountain West Player of the Year. A lot of potential there. And obviously another name that will command a huge NIL price. Wuga Poplar out of Miami. Speaking of Norchad Omir earlier in the pod, GP. There's been some Duke smoke. I'm not entirely sure where he's going. I really like him. He'll be one of the buzzier transfer names by the time we get to next season. And then AJ Hogard from Michigan State, we wait on him. Dylan Mitchell from Texas, we wait on him. Jameer Watkins, I think you have maybe Alabama still trying to get in there on that, although I wouldn't think so. I think if Sears comes back, Baylor, Michigan are names with Jameer Watkins out of Florida State, was an honorable mention all ACC. And then North Florida's Chaz Lanier is not a big time name, but he's being sought after by big schools. And it's looking like that might be Kentucky. And if it's not Kentucky, it's Tennessee. And if it's not Tennessee, it might be BYU. So those are some of the biggest uncommitted names. GP's going to have version 21.0 before he knows it. No more multi-day updates though. You don't need it.
We put a stop to that.
Okay, yeah, like there was one, I can't remember what it was, although I'm sure you can because the trauma probably is still lingering with you. But I want to say, like, you updated the top 25 and what I saw it after the fact. Like, you updated it, it published, and like 7 minutes later, there was like a notable commitment. And you're like, all right, hold on, I got to do this. I got to do this all over.
I think it was McNeely to UConn committed 7 minutes after an update. The great Marcus Nelson crystallized this for me. I like it when people say things to me that make me see things that I, for whatever reason, couldn't see on my own. I enjoy when people do that. So I was like, all right, Marcus, I'm sending version 8.0 in a minute. And he was like, think about this as if you updated the top 25 and one during the season, and then UConn played at noon and UConn lost, you wouldn't update at 2:30 in the afternoon. You just wait until tomorrow. So let's just wait till tomorrow. Not to suggest UConn would ever lose. I didn't mean to do that. I know better. I've learned my lesson. I know UConn would never. I know. It. Look, let me redo that. Indiana it plays at noon, and then Indiana loses. Hold up. That's not. Indiana wouldn't be in the top 25 and one. You get my point.
Oh, my gosh. Stray. Come on.
You get my point. You know the point I'm trying to make. Marcus said we could just do this once a day at the most. And I said, deal. And now we're kind of doing it once a day. It feels like we're basically once a day.
I think it needs to slow down ASAP for you and the benefit of your golf game. By the way, speaking of UConn, before we get out of here, and we can get out of here quick here. It doesn't need to be a long show. But I think I got to give you runway here. I think I've got to give you some runway because your worlds collided. Worlds are colliding. Your worlds collided on Monday night because we're not going to play because I don't think we have the rights to play. Now, Nada's got the photo up right here. I did watch this. Dan Hurley was on, was it WWE Raw? Is that the name of the program?
That's GP? Right.
So they were at XL Center. Someone tagged me on the tweet machine, was like, Norlander should be there. no chance. My quick review is Dan Hurley is a miserable actor. I mean, he could not keep a straight face throughout this thing, but I did get a good chuckle out of it seeing him involved. I assume if he had actually been involved in any kind of wrestling match, it would have hit my timeline. So that wasn't... The fact that that didn't happen is a massive letdown. I feel like Dan Hurley getting involved in that, like, what are we doing here? How did they miss that as opposed to him being a part of some 75-second skit? But I need your thoughts. And if you knew, like, did you know this was going to be a thing before it happened? Because I know you're dialed into Raw on a weekly basis.
I did not know it was going to be a thing. I was watching it live. Last night was a busy night. You had a Mets Cardinals. And then the NBA playoffs, and then you got Raw, and you had a John Mulaney live thing on Netflix. There was a lot going on. So I did have it on live. What happened? Those are your tag team champions right now, and they wanted to make a splash on Raw. So it was going to be champions against champions, and they were going to, since UConn's back-to-back champions, they were going to challenge UConn in Dan Hurley. And then it had to be explained, like, you don't want to get in a ring with a basketball team. Right.
Can you imagine that would have led the show? That would have been phenomenal. Can even like some of these guys aren't.
Cam Spencer, not even Klingon.
I think Klingon's like working out in Miami right now. Like they're not there. So like, but that would have been amazing. The idea that they would have like gone two on eight or whatever. That would have been awesome.
Yeah. So that was the bit. Dan really just stood there for, 45 seconds or whatever. It was just to make an appearance. It was good though. Like, he's reached that level of, he's reached that level where he can just pop up anywhere. And it makes sense. Like Dan Hurley popping up on Raw, like, it was a moment. I don't know how much it helps in recruiting and all that stuff. People always ask questions like that. I don't have any idea, but I thought it was cool. Like Dan Hurley's on WWE. That was fun for me.
How about that? Nice little cameo there. But I watched someone share the entire clip and like I don't know if he was supposed to be acting or whatever, but he was breaking character if that was the case. Like he was practically laughing throughout the whole thing. But it was good stuff, and that was a fun little College Hoops crossover. Hey, back to back world champs end up on Raw. I had no idea that was even in my state, but good on Hurley, good on UConn.
I think we're ready to go.
I think that's it.
Let's get out of here then. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Terry Teagle's a legend. Shouts to Huck Marnell.
Okay. Speaking of shouts, shouts to cbs@gmail.com. We've got a lot of mailbag questions already, but shouts to cbs@gmail.com. Feel free to send them. We'll either do a mailbag show later this week or next week. We are overdue for one, and we'll get some good stuff lined up for you.
Hey, if you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. More of us than there are of them. That needs to be reflected in the comments. So please do that. We'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
What if if I told you imaginary friends are real?
This is just so exciting.
Now, get ready for the movie event with the greatest cast you've ever imagined.
Showtime.
Ryan Reynolds, John Krasinski, Kaylee Fleming, Fiona Shaw, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Louis Gossett Jr., Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, George Clooney, Maya Rudolph, Bradley Cooper, Sebastian Maniscalco, John Stewart, Sam Rockwell, Awkwafina, Keegan-Michael Key, and Steve Carell.
I need to throw up or I need a snack. It's one of the two.
Gross.
If, rated PG, parental guidance suggested. Written and directed by John Krasinski.